Now navigating financial markets with Chris and Jenny on 1010XL.
Good morning, we the people of Northeast Florida and Jacksonville. Welcome to another episode of Navigating Financial Markets with your host, Chris Rochelle, and Miss Jenny Shimp, as always, here by side.
Good morning, everybody. What a beautiful weekend.
Well, it's a little overcast, but, you know, it could be worse. It could be downpouring all weekend, but I do think we're going to have a little off and on showers. But just to get a little disclosure out of the way, every week, discussions on this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your own investment professional before making any important investment decisions. Securities with RFW Wealth Advisors are offered through Cambridge Investment Research, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. And our advisory services are offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, a registered investment advisor. As always, RFW Wealth Advisors and Cambridge are not affiliated companies. So, but I would say, you know, the weather this weekend might be a little similar to kind of the mood of the market. It seems things are a little cloudy and, you know, little something happened this week.
Oh, my goodness. You stress all the time about the Fed's influence on the markets, Chris. I heard Fed word vomit. Talking about was more or less the theme of the meeting.
So this is where I talk about how people do mental gymnastics to come up with ways to inflect communication. And the Fed is a master of it. The Fed did their, you know, quarterly report, if you will, with a presser that Jerome Powell did afterwards. We didn't even used to do a presser before Bernanke started to do that. And the reason for the presser was for providing communication so that the market can have clarity. And of course, you know, I've heard for better part of a decade that the Fed does not inflate asset prices, that's not true. But just minor word changes and dot plot movements from like 4 years out to 3 years out to 2 years out seems to have at least, you know, caught people's attention. And it reversed a lot of themes that have been going on in the market. And so that does tell you the amount of impact the Federal Reserve has on markets. They have an $8 billion balance sheet, folks. We have now tripped over trillion. In the last week, $8 trillion balance sheet. And in 1 week, I was kind of looking at bond market attitudes or movements, really even going back to the last crappy jobs report that we got. And essentially, interest rates in the 10-year have been coming down in the face of a lot of really high inflationary numbers. With this past week, the PPI was 6.6% on Tuesday, the day before the Fed meeting.
Isn't that the highest it's ever been?
That is the highest on record. So, I mean, at least we got Jerome Powell and then, the Bullard's comments. He's the St. Louis Fed governor, has been for more than a decade, but he's not a voting member, but he got out in front Friday morning, and it was his comments that truly moved markets and changed kind of the communication style of the Fed. The reality is every one of us that like lives in normal life knows we've had inflation. The question's going to be whether it's transitory or more long-term. Things like, you know, prices of lumber, which have come off their highs, copper, you know, those are prices that started to move up because of the amount of borrowing and huge bailout bills that we've passed over the last year. The amount of, you know, deficit spending the government was going to do. What that tells you is, especially with an infrastructure program that was initially floated at $2.2 trillion, that basically says, wow, there's going to be a lot of demand for goods and services coming out of the pandemic. And obviously anybody that lives in Florida knows that people are moving to Florida. There was 1 million people a year moving to Florida before the pandemic. And we've accelerated that with a variety of different reasons, which I don't necessarily care to go too delved into right now. But at the end of the day, what you have is all this demand and lack of labor creates supply chain shortages. It creates all kinds of issues with more demand than you have supply. So when that happens, prices go up. But what you see is builders get to a point with something like lumber where they're like, look, we just can't afford, you know, to raise prices in this market to deal with these higher lumber prices.
So what I kind of got out of it is nobody will actually say that it's the inflation is transitory and that we won't really know until it's too late.
Correct. And that's the concern of the Fed. Is it transitory or does it become more entrenched? And when you see, you know, $15 an hour as a wage living wage, whatever people, you know, again, I love they call it a living wage when we've talked before on the show that it's meant for entry level compensation as the minimum wage for people that don't have skills. So we're not trying to pay a living wage to people who don't have skills. I mean, the minimum wage was initially meant for teenagers entering the job market. That's why I got paid minimum wage when I started washing dishes in high school. So at the end of the day, where we are right now is this inflection point or reality that all the policies, all the printing, all the borrowing that took place last year and is continuing into this year is going to create an artificial demand. If you hand people sugar, they get hyper. So that's kind of what markets have been doing, especially in the commodities market. The amount of borrowing that we were going to suggest that to the market that we were going to do was putting a downward price pressure on the dollar. Well, that puts an upward price pressure on commodities because the global markets are dollar denominated as the world's reserve currency. So all of these policies that we're doing by a bunch of academics or political folks that are trying to purchase votes, it really does have an impact and it drives inflation. So when you pay people to stay at home an artificial wage that then impacts small business community that's trying to open back up, they have to pay their employees more than $15 an hour to get them to come back to work. And small businesses just can't simply afford it. I mean, imagine you're a small business owner with a restaurant, and we've harped on this and it may be driving people nuts, but you've lived through the pandemic. You lived through shutdowns. And it was even worse outside of states like Florida because obviously we stayed locked down less than other areas. But you may have spent down some of your assets. You may have borrowed money. You may have taken PPP funds. But at some point when you reopen of, oh my gosh, we made it to the reopening, and now you're competing with your own government for labor, restaurants, Jenny, have a really small profit margin.
Mainly on alcohol.
Yeah, I mean, alcohol sales for a lot of restaurants are where the margin ultimately is. You bring them in with food, you make money on the margin edge of your alcohol sales. And so if you aren't packed and you've got to have the volume correct to exceed your overhead.
You got to have the people to wait the tables, though.
You got to have people that actually can serve the client and the customer. You got to have people in the kitchen that can actually cook the meals. And after a year and a half, if you're a small business owner and you're not one of these corporate restaurant chains, you don't have extra cash. You don't have any cash. You just want to pay your bills and make that profit margin. And now you have to compete with your own government for labor. That's insane. But that policy ultimately creates wage-based inflation that once that's in the system and companies like Chipotle are having to raise food prices, anybody that's been to the grocery store knows that those costs are going up. Those are the costs that aren't typically transitory. So for the Fed to finally acknowledge that we have inflation above their target of 2%, and they even last year at Jackson Hole, which, you know, when they make major changes to their policy, a lot of the times, you know, you'll get a clear communication of what that change is going to be every August when they get global central banks together. It's a bunch of academics and central bank folks from around the world that get together and talk about policy. So there's generally a lot that comes out of that week's symposium in August. And so what I think the Fed really did, to your point, was instead of we're not going to talk about raising rates, now what we've really moved to is, well, maybe we're going to chat about talking about raising interest rates. And so that changes the dynamic. They also recognized that the inflation exists. They updated their forecast for inflation for the rest of the year, along with economic growth. And that you know, reality that we've been begging the Fed to do pretty much most of the year is you're buying $120 billion worth of treasuries and mortgage bonds that are artificially keeping interest rates low. That fuels part of the inflation in the demand for houses, because the cheaper you make the payment through the interest rate function of a mortgage, the more you drive up the price. And then you drive up, you know, access to funds, you drive up demand. Then you have all kinds of policies about raising taxes on people. And, you know, they vote, people with money vote with their feet. And so they've been leaving these high tax places. They've been leaving areas where they pay for police protection and they're not getting it under this defund the police nonsense. And so they go to where it's better. If you've lived in Michigan after the year of lockdowns and rolling lockdowns, and you say to yourself, well, there's still some variants out there that we might have to worry about with the pandemic, with COVID come the fall, I'd rather live where at least I have real life experience knowing they're not going to, you know, make my life miserable by forcing me to stay at home as we roll into next fall. So all that demand extra demand relative to a contraction of supply. And as we come out of the pandemic, you just can't get supply up and running, especially when people won't go to work fast enough to meet the demand. So those inflationary pressures could be transitory. And I think things like lumber we're already seeing come off. China, you know, did a bunch of things like releasing reserves of copper and other metals like aluminum into the marketplace. So when you flood the market with supply, that'll have a negative impact. And really what they were trying to do was just get traders that are trading futures contracts to kind of stop bidding up the price of the future cost of things like commodities. So, you know, we've seen kind of a blow off there at least. And we've come back down to a little bit more of a reality in some of those prices. So, again, I did always think that that would be transitory. But the real issue is going to be, what is this artificial wage inflation? That's the kind of source of inflation that's hard to stamp out. And even though you may increase somebody from $14 to $15 an hour, if you see the cost of food go up 20% or gas prices go up 50%, you know, I don't care if it's still not a living wage.
I know. Mi Casa has become my restaurant of choice.
And it's kind of like, well, we got to take a break here. RJ's telling us we got to run to some commercials and pay some bills. So why don't we pick up that conversation on the other side of the break? But for folks out there, just understand that the messaging has changed. And now you got to start really looking at, okay, what are the valuations of what I own? And is it reasonable? And how long is the music going to keep playing before it stops? So we'll talk on the other side of the break more about these issues.
This is Navigating Financial Markets with Chris and Jenny on 1010XL.
Oh, there you go. Northeast Florida and Jacksonville, we the people. Welcome back to the show. A little Angus Young riff for you this morning. Start things off. So as we were wrapping up the last segment, we were talking a little bit about what went on in the market. And what I really think we're going to move to is the psychology of the market's going to be changing based on the change of the Fed's communication. And again, don't get wrapped up into, I don't think the world's going to end here in the near run. I just think it's starting to tell you that you really do need to pay attention to the valuations of the stocks and the assets that you own. You got to start thinking about, you know, what happens when we get to an unsustainable place? Do I own stocks that have gone parabolic? Parabolic means that the stock chart took a left-hand turn at Albuquerque. And we've already seen some of the speculative, I mean, it's really the speculative trades that are going to start to unwind, because the Fed being on hold with interest rates longer is now a changed story. It's likely that because of recognition of inflation being above their target, they're going to talk about communication. And I think really what they're telling you is we're going to make a recommendation at Jackson Hole about what we're going to do to communicate the reduction in asset purchases that have been fueling, I mean, especially mortgages. Nobody in their right mind that knows anything about the economy can understand why we're buying $40 billion a month in mortgages to suppress interest rates. I even called my buddy over at Future Home Loans, Rob Lynn. We were talking about this yesterday, and I'm like, so you've had these rental moratoriums, and you've had, and by the way, we just went to an all-time high on the rental rate to equity in property. So you want to talk about something that's really inflationary is when people have to pay higher rent. That's another thing that you just can't get out of the system when rent prices start to hike. And rental rates and some of these issues, it affects poor people and older people living on fixed incomes more than anyone else. So these are the people that supposedly we're looking out for with all of the policies with handouts. But when those policies have unintended consequences, it causes problems and puts more pressure on the Fed. And part of the pressure in everyone's life is paying higher prices for things when you live on a fixed income or you don't make a lot of money. So the Fed last year in Jackson Hole basically said, we're going to worry less about inflation, that risk, and we're going to worry more about the labor markets and social equity within the labor markets. And this is where we get off path. And don't forget, the Fed, we're the only one in the globe that has a dual mandate of worrying about labor, labor rates relative to inflation. Most other countries worry about, you know, cost of living and that it doesn't get into runaway inflation. That is always usually the primary concern. But we've been operating for a decade at below the 2% target of inflation. And that's kind of why we've had a really long run in growth coming out of 2009. But structurally, we've just had a bunch of things that have impeded growth, and really slow growth doesn't kind of kick into inflation. And that's where the Fed's been kind of trying to architect or engineer and manage the economy. So now that we're getting the inflation after the pandemic, you know, you see a change in conversation. So the blue chips were down, and I love when the media goes, and the markets tumbled 533 points on Friday. That was a 1.6% drop. That's not a big deal. So, you know, here, as always, we got the media trying to, you know, use all kinds of adjectives to sell ads on TV. But at the end of the day, a 500-point drop off of a 33,000 starting point in the Dow versus, say, 10,000 in the Dow 10 years ago, those are two different numbers from a percentage drop. So we still haven't had more than a 5% drop in the S&P going back to, like, last September. So we did get a decent-sized drop in the Dow, but that's where you've seen a lot of this year's outperformance hasn't been in technology, hasn't been in the stay-at-home. It's been in the reopening cyclical, industrial, things that would benefit from an infrastructure plan. And as I shared with you last week, I was glad to see that some of these astronomical numbers that we were using with more borrowed money for things that none of us would call infrastructure, but a more social payouts to our ideological thought processes instead of truly investing in the country. And now you've got a couple of about 10, 20 senators that are jumping on board, both Democrats and Republicans, compromising, coming together and say, states have all kinds of money. I mean, they got more money than they know what to do with because of the three bailout bills we've already passed. So how about instead of continuing to just give handouts to people, let's start making investments in the country that truly create a sustainable workplace instead of the government being the payer of all things. As of last year, we, you know, the government was 30% of people's personal income. That's just dumb. It's not sustainable. So it results in inflation, and now we're starting to use calmer, you know, people are just using their brains, and at least, you know, the infrastructure bill now might be more like $900 billion, but at the end of the day, it'll be repurposing money that's already been passed instead of adding more to our debt with a higher budget deficit. So with the markets falling off only about 3% in the Dow last week, 3.6, the S&P only fell off about 1.9, but the NASDAQ didn't really come off. So what you're seeing here is this rotation of money looking for a place to go based on valuations. And so with all of the value stocks outperforming, banks outperforming, energy stocks outperforming, those are the ones you saw sell off the most in the last week or so. And bank stocks especially sold off because short-term rates went up, whereas long-term rates actually came down in the 10 and the 30-year, but the 2 and the 5-year went up. A flattening of the yield curve is not good for financials, and so you did see banks kind of check up as much as anybody as an asset class or a sector in the marketplace. So now we're like in this, where do we go from here? And it is very cloudy. So what I would encourage people to do is look at their more speculative trades. And if you've still got decent profits or things like you've already seen Bitcoin come down, you've already seen the tech trade and the Tesla world come down from last year. But if you've got really big profits and even anything like John Deere or some of these things with really stretched PE ratios, you should probably look to trim some of those positions. I've been telling, you know, people to kind of carry a little extra cash because I thought the markets were overvalued. And let's kind of dig into that a little bit. I mean, this is now where the psychology of the market or the fear of missing out was pushing prices to unsustainable levels. We are at median PE ratios higher than even the dot-com days. We've never seen PE ratios higher. So now it's about the Fed communication, I think, is going to start changing the psychology of markets.
So I was reading a quote by Seth Carlman. Investing is the intersection of economics and psychology. The economics, the valuation of the business is not hard. The psychology, which is how much do you buy? Do you buy at this price? Do you wait for a lower price? What do you do when it looks like the world might end? Or, in my opinion, feel, I would add that. Those are the harder things. And I guess in the final analysis, it seems like the worst enemy of the investor is most likely himself.
So when you're investing, your own personal feeling or confidence level in owning something, or even your own purchases from a month-to-month basis, when you see inflation going up, 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 at some point prices get to such a level where the investor or the purchaser or whatever goes, no, I'm not going to buy. And that's the teetering point. that's where investor psychology, if everybody's hitting the turnstiles coming into a concert, at some point they got to get out. And when that investor psychology switches and you simply say, I'm not willing to buy that stock, that bond, that item, that used car at a higher incremental price, then you start to lose the momentum. So momentum investing, especially with some of these Reddit trading things where GameStop and AMC theaters, where really somebody like Michael Burry actually in those Reddit chats found an arbitrage trade where something made no sense, where something like GameStop was overshorted by hedge funds, and they knew that they, through momentum, could band together and, as we talked about in the past, get people out of their shorts. That is the last of the speculative trades that I really see that have not at least started to sell off. Like I said, lumber prices are down. You've got that more speculative area in cryptocurrency that finally has sold off. Tesla and a lot of the Zooms and all of the stay-at-home stocks really started to sell off more towards the part of the beginning of the year. This is where the rubber starts to meet the road. And are we truly going to be able to make the same profits when input prices for companies are going up? And right now they're raising prices, but for a lot of the states, for example, 20-some-odd states are going to stop adding that artificial unemployment benefit to people as of this past Friday. Another group of those same states that are now starting to even include Democratic states are going to start reducing it or requiring look-for-work requirements. But if you noticed on Jen Thursday, what did we see as a surprise in the job numbers?
They were definitely up.
They were higher than expected. We went back to over 420,000 in new jobless claims. Well, why is that happening? Why would all of a sudden in a job market where there's 9 million jobs in the JOLTS report open, we still have 7 million people or less jobs than we had before? Why are they not getting filled? And more importantly, why would we be in that environment adding back to new people claiming unemployment? And I kind of shared it with you. There are businesses that have tried to stay in business as long as they can. Some people came back to work when they were ready to reopen. But all of a sudden, now I'm competing with my own government for labor costs. I can't afford as a small business community to pay higher costs after what I've lived with for the last year and a half and the social simulation experiment that we all just went through. I just made it here barely. So some of the employees came back. And ultimately, I just run out of gas. Roy's restaurant out at the beach, you know, it's been there for 20-something years. Roy Yamaguchi used to be owned by the Outback Group. A gentleman bought that franchise out of California, years and years ago, to kind of keep it afloat. But that's a good example of a restaurant most people at the beach are familiar with. It gave up the ghost because it simply can't carry the additional debt that it took on if it can't stay at full capacity because it can't have enough employees to come into work. So they go out of business. What do? It's another round of layoffs that come from some of these really bad policies. So as we shift forward and really start to look at valuations, let's look at where we sit today. Median PE ratio. That means you got 500 companies in the S&P 500. 50% of them have PE ratios, price to earnings ratios, higher than 33. That means the other 50 have lower than 33. But that median PE ratio is now, as of this month, even higher than it was in the .com. That was the last number for us to hit that was record highs relative to valuations. Now, the argument for these really high valuations of stock prices is because interest rates are so low. But the only reason interest rates are so low is because of the expansion of the Fed's balance sheet, buying and monetizing, it's called quantitative easing. They're monetizing our debt, or they're printing money or digitally expanding their balance sheet. It's not like there's physical currency out there, $8 trillion more. But at the end of the day, that artificial demand in the secondary bond market buying keeps interest rates artificially low. With us at 3% inflation, interest rates should be at 4% because they should be hedging the cost of inflation. So if next year, and this is what Bullard put out on Friday that really impacted the market, and this is the Fed kind of, by the way, using one of their famous tools, the jawbone tool. They send Bullard out on Friday. So I'll be curious to see where we go next week as to whether some of the volatility that happened on Friday continues. Because my guess is they sent him out with a more hawkish tone. Remember, Bullard currently is not a voting member on the Fed. But next week, I bet you'll hear from other members like Lael Brainard, and they'll come out and talk more in a dovish way. this is a way to kind of sustain this. Okay, we recognize there's inflation, realize marketplace that nothing's drastic going to happen in the near term, but the communication or the direction of where we're heading has shifted. We're not just going to stay in this massive emergency mode that we've been in through the pandemic, because hopefully we're out of the pandemic. So we're going to take another break here and continue this conversation. Again, I hope everybody enjoys the financial literacy, because the more you know about what affects markets, I wish that fiscal policy and central bank policy didn't have as much of an effect on the market, but unfortunately it does. We've been printing and borrowing our way to prosperity for the better part of a decade and change. At some point, we've got to have a fundamental economy return, and that's what I want to talk about in the third segment. So we'll be back right after this break.
This is Navigating Financial Markets with Chris and Jenny on 1010XL.
Welcome back, we the people of Northeast Florida and Jacksonville. Again, your host, Chris Rochelle with RFW Wealth Advisors. Here we're navigating financial markets on a Saturday. I know that's super fun for all you sports fans, but things got a little sporty last week, as we've been discussing on the show. One more round of disclosures here. Discussions on the show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your own investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities with RFW Wealth Advisors are offered through Cambridge Investment Research, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. And our advisory services at RFW Wealth Advisors are offered through Cambridge Investment Research, a registered investment advisor. Good Lord, I say this in my sleep at this point. But as always, RFW Wealth Advisors and Cambridge are not affiliated companies. So we were talking about kind of what the Fed did was change the messaging. And basically what they told you is the music is going to stop playing sooner than later. And we've been working through, this has been more than a decade. We came out of 2009. It's been an engineered economy through printing and borrowing. And at some point that kind of runs out of the ability to sustain. But it was a really, really long business cycle, Jen. The business cycle was literally from 2009 to 2020. I mean, it was 11-year long business cycle. That's one of the longest since World War II.
It seems to me we aren't allowing the natural economic cycle to complete. It feels engineered.
So last year, because of the pandemic, we finally had a recession, but just like the engineered recession, or excuse me, the engineered growth cycle that we saw as a really long business cycle, we actually didn't allow price discovery to happen because we did that much more expansion of the Fed's balance sheet. In 6 weeks, we did a more expansion of the Fed's balance sheet with swap rates to Europe than we did. I mean, we're supporting European banks, folks. I mean, that's a little bizarre. So we're destroying the credibility of our world's reserve currency in helping to support everybody. And, you know, as we watch the kings of debt stand before us at the G7, in their little globalist love fest that we've talked about last week, couldn't have heard more bizarre commentary. But, you know, they're happy to have good old Biden back in the club of Davos environment, you know, climate accord and the Paris, you know, agreement. Mr. Macron truly stepped forward, almost at sometimes looking like he was helping Biden walk. You know, Merkel as Germany's economy is really the leader of the European Union. But she will be stepping down as chancellor, and ultimately it's pretty clear that Mr. Macron is wanting to step into her shoes when she departs. But this engineering that is also going on in Europe, it's going on in Japan, it's going on in the UK, those are the G7 countries, and so we're financing and monetizing the debt that those countries have built up, and those groups, you know, they love to tell the rest of the world what to do, but last time I checked, there's more than 7 countries in the globe. And this is where a lot of the backlash is happening from other competitors in emerging markets like South America. And, you know, anytime we got a problem, we send somebody to their country, tell them we're going to send you guys a bunch of investment dollars. And, you know, please tell your people to stay in your country and quit coming over the border. I mean, it's just dumb. It's just dumb. I'm so sick of watching that group of elites tell the rest of the world what to do. And the problem is we can't afford to tell them what to do anymore. We can't afford to be the world's policeman. But at the end of the day, the central bank activity and the engineering, Jen, that you were talking about in the economy, I wonder if we're going to have the sustainability this time. The Fed's balance sheet is now $8 trillion. How far can it go before the credibility of the world's reserve currency being the dollar come under question? That is what has given birth to Bitcoin and all these cryptocurrencies, is what these global central banks have been doing in printing, you know, or diluting the value of their currencies. At some point, that's going to pop.
I was showing a client last week the Fed balance sheet, and I swear it looked awful lot like the Cliffhangers game on the Price is Right.
On the Price is Right show?
Yep.
The yodel game, Swedish Cliffhanger game.
Yes.
That's what I worry about. And that's really what we're talking about, is if we artificially create an economy for too long and we're building an asset bubble, the next business cycle might be extremely short. And that's possibly going to catch a lot of investors off guard, is because as we build up these asset bubbles, at some point they have to deflate. And they don't end with like a sideways move or a slow move down. They basically run out of gas and crater. And that's the kind of market you don't want to see. So being at these really high PE ratios with inflation starting to rear its ugly head, which is worse than in some cases unemployment numbers. I mean, unemployment of 5% and change historically is not that bad, folks. The problem we have is our labor participation rate, which, again, paying people to stay at home or scaring people into retirement or giving them an unemployment benefit that goes out long enough that bridges them to age 62 or age 60 for pensions, like policemen. Policemen can get pensions at 55. So you treat them like garbage. They'll just execute their pension and go move and go live somewhere else. So all of this stuff that we're doing artificially actually has real life impacts. And many times it influences unintended consequences that the people who implemented the policies really don't have any idea that they were going to cause. So that's where we're sitting. What's the Game of Thrones, the winter is coming. Winter is coming. Folks, winter is here.
It is.
At least from an economic standpoint. There's a great book, The Fourth Turning by Neil Howe. I encourage everybody to read it. If you don't allow cycles to take place and finish out, if you don't allow a real recession to take place, I think you're probably setting up to have a bit of a double dip recession. So while these inflationary numbers will exist, it's going to force the Fed to raise rates sooner. It's going to shut off the valve of the artificial engineering, which has been driving the market. And at some point, the political process runs out of steam to be able to borrow money if the Fed can't quantitatively ease it or monetize it, because of inflationary pressures. That's what you're seeing take place. I think it's a good thing, because the further up the cliff we go, the worse the drop's going to be whenever the music stops. And I don't know when the music's going to stop. Nobody ever knows when the music's going to stop. You don't always know what the catalyst is going to be. But at some point, you get to an unsustainable place in the markets. And for people that are retired, you know, they can't even make money in bonds. You can't generate a rate of return. Insurance companies can't finance their promises. That increases insurance premiums. So it's the Fed that's actually creating these problems. And it creates inequality, because really, really rich people, you can try and tax them all day long. You can try and come up with all kinds of elaborate strategies to create wealth taxes and extract capital from them. Well, they've got more attorneys. They've got more CPAs.
Or they just won't sell assets.
Or they just won't sell assets, to the point that last week we were talking about, now they want to tax assets for the wealthy. And what's unfortunate about that is it may be fun politically to like blame a group of people and say they need to pay their fair share. But in all reality, life's not fair. And no time in history that we've done a wealth tax on people did it work. We actually reduced the amount of taxes that we took in, because if you don't incentivize people to invest in businesses, create businesses that grow, that growth employs people, those people get, you know, the ability to purchase items and goods. So if you tax them more and de-incentivize them from their business investments to take the risk that they're taking, or they move offshore with their assets or come up with elaborate, you know, things they do in the derivative markets to avoid taking, you know, income, then you don't have any income to tax. So that's where we're now with Elizabeth Warren wanting to tax people's unrealized gains. Well, that's dumb. That doesn't work. AMT taxes were something that came into the 60s, and it was meant to tax the richest 155 families in the country. Fast forward to 2017, it affected 11 million people. It also then creates artificial incentives for AMT-free tax municipal bonds, which then create artificial tax incentives for broke states to access the debt markets. So, and that's a real rabbit hole we could go down. But the bottom line with that kind of situation is when you do it, it doesn't have the outcome or the end result that you want. It's just popular to do. It may be popular because of what we're doing here, But what caused the problem? If you have really, really low interest rates, you make it cheaper for rich people to live on loans. So if these artificially low rates didn't exist, they probably wouldn't take the loans against their assets. It's like a vicious cycle. So to say or put on the Federal Reserve to be more socially equitable, it's nonsense. It doesn't work. The more pressure you put on them to keep interest rates artificially low then creates other problems that you didn't intend for society. So how about we get back to a more fundamental organization of growth in our economy based on real factors? You have a millennial generation that is coming into its earning potential. We lived through a horrible decade of the 70s, and the baby boomers coming into the work environment making their peak wages through the latter 80s and 90s is what fueled the economy. But it fueled it naturally. We brought in income taxes. We balanced the budget under the Clinton administration. And that was Congress, a Republican-controlled Congress, working with a Democratic White House and compromising not to overspend, not to do universal health care, not to pass laws that no grandmas died this week. I mean, we're trying to fuel butterflies, rainbows, and a utopian outcome, and it's just not the way it works. So the more we artificially try to engineer things, the worse the bubble drop is going to be when the deflation of the balloon comes out. People like Gundlach have been talking about, Jeff Gundlach's a famous bond manager, and he's been talking all year. You know, you saw the VIX go to 40 during the pandemic because it was uncharted territory. He thinks the next recession isn't going to be interest rates going down and stocks going down. When interest rates go down, bonds go up, so that diversification, you know, helps offset some of the drop in the equity market. He thinks you're going to be in an environment where the Fed loses control of the bond market or the ability to manipulate interest rates lower, that the VIX could hit 80, and at the end of the day, both stocks and bonds are going down at the same time. That concern and risk is what's fueling people looking at a speculative trade that they don't even understand, like cryptocurrency, as some hope, if you will, to avoid that kind of drop. Well, does it work? We'll find out, because, again, you've already seen some of the bubblicious nature of some of these momentum trades come out. And at some point, the AMC and the GameStop thing's going to end badly for people, too. Let the business cycle take place. Let price discovery happen through a real recession. Again, winter's here. We got to get through winter and get to spring instead of trying to stave off winter. It's going to come. That's Mother Nature. We're not God. None of our policies are going to stop that from happening. So we're going to wrap up this week's show on the other side of the break, talking a little bit about some of the G7 stuff or kind of my rant of the week. And again, we'll talk a little bit about Father's Day because I lost my dad a couple years ago. I miss him, and for all the fathers out there, the dads, the moms that are also dads, I hope you all enjoy celebrating tomorrow. Moms and Pops Day is always important. So we're going to take one more break here and wrap up next week's show.
This is Navigating Financial Markets with Chris and Jenny on 1010XL.
Well, welcome back, everybody. We appreciate you being with us this weekend.
That's awesome.
So,
thanks, RJ.
Speaking of uninformed pitching, I was reading Kim Kardashian is now in the social influencing game pitching crypto. And I do quote, "Are you guys into crypto?"
I doubt seriously she even knows what blockchain technology is. This is kind of the exuberance that you see that we say. When you're starting to have questions come in or you're getting advice from your Uber driver or your hairstylist and they're telling you that they've bought some of these things after huge run-ups, that's the kind of psychology that I'm talking about. The fear of missing out ultimately leads to, you know, people jumping in at the end. That over-exuberance is the last cycle of a market bubble. And that's where I think we need to really be looking at, folks, is are you doing things to start ratcheting down the risk? Again, I don't necessarily see... Again, and you never see what is the sand pile event, what's the catalyst coming. It's always something new. But what you can see is that, you know, people like Jeremy Grantham, who are far smarter than I, are saying we are officially in a bubble. But that was back in January. And he said to folks, you know, you don't know when that bubble's going to burst, but you have to start pre-planning for it. Missing out on that last 10% in a market is way better than participating 100%. In the drop of the market. And right now, to get back to fair value, which would be a median PE of about 17, would require a drop in the market of 48%. So is the Fed going to allow price discovery to happen? Are we going to stop providing bailouts to companies? Are we going to actually implement some negative consequences to bad decisions? Or are we just going to continue to dream for butterflies, rainbows, and utopian outcomes and pass laws that no grandmas die tomorrow? I know that's something we would all like, but the reality of life's not fair has to be experienced. And winter is here. It's now just a question of when does it start snowing? And that's where I think people truly have to understand what we're up against. You can't engineer an economy forever. And at some point, we have to let fundamentals take over. I think what the Fed just communicated to us is that's going to be sooner than later. And while we may get inflationary pressures today, the deflation, where people that are arguing that it's going to move back to deflationary environments, I think they're basically telling you think we're going to have a double dip recession. Because during that period of time, obviously, inflation would go off because the wealth effect of dropping asset prices doesn't really stimulate a lot of people buying stuff. So another little funny thing that I noticed in the G7, it's funny. You get a little bit different treatment from the press when you're abroad than you do in a White House briefing. This close handling of Biden, he always talks, well, I'm going to get trouble with my staff if I answer that question or if I don't take the questions in order. Folks, if you don't realize at this point how this is just another example of how managed the world we live in is. They don't let Biden speak or don't want him to speak unless he knows exactly what to say and read off of a cue card. And he got busted left and right when he was at the G7, basically showing how weak his memory and he is by not being able to take questions. And then he was like, well, I've got to make sure I take the questions in order. In order? Why? It's because you already have the questions submitted or you know that they're not going to get called on. So we are managing our, quote, free press by telling them they have to submit the questions they're going to ask in order to get called on. So then Biden calls on them in order of the order of his cue cards with the questions and the answers right on them. And you'll notice they try to get in a second question, and if he ever goes off into an answering a second question, it's awesome. It's like, let's get ready to mumble. And he doesn't have a clue what to say because he doesn't have the answers in front of him. So, at least give it to Trump. He sat there every time he left the White House and answered any question anyone wanted to ask him based on how he truly felt. Whereas I don't know how Biden feels. Biden, the words that come out of Biden's mouth and his belief system, I mean, even the Catholic Church has questioned his belief system as to whether they're ever going to continue to give him communion. But if you look at his policies over the last 40, 47 years, most of what he says today is very inconsistent with things he said for years. So I question who's truly in control of our government. It scares me. I think we're just managing a social experiment at this point, and that is not what our founding fathers tried to create a government around. We need real people to step up and do the people's work. We send them to Washington. Quit failing us and just saving the issues that you never solve for the next election cycle. And allow pain to happen. You know, when we have things go wrong, sometimes you just have to let them go wrong, have price discovery, and I think that would be more helpful in the long run. Thus, the size of the drop off the cliff would be less. So enjoy your weekend. Enjoy your Father's Day. Enjoy your family here over the summer. I'm excited to see people getting back together. And most importantly, I'm excited to see, some senators on both sides of the aisle coming together for some compromise, for some bipartisanship. So let's wish for good things to come.